Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics.
Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Kirk Gray.
And this is Fred Schenkelberg. And Kirk and I, over the last, year, 2 years, we've been banting about AI and how wonderful or useful or worthless it is and everything in between. So I thought, I'm going to check. I'm going to go into my Google search bar, and it gives me this AI overview thing at the top all the time now. Mm-hmm. And who is, the way I asked it was, and I don't have it on the screen, who is the best reliability engineering consultant in the world? And this sounds a lot like, you know, the who's the fairest of them all from a fairy tale that Disney made a movie out of.
Yeah.
And so I thought, well, you know, what's it going to say? And I was number one.
Yeah, surprise!
And then, Ricky Smith, which I totally agree with, is really good. He's obviously better than I am. I don't know why he wasn't top bill. And it gave a couple other names. And then I said, all right, Kirk, let's double check this. You know, we're reliability engineers. Let's check our work.
Yeah.
So I asked you to run the same one, and you got something different.
Right. I got Ricky Smith, John Lee, Specialized Boutique Firms, Arms Reliability, Emerson Reliability Consulting, Lifecycle Engineering, and BQR Reliability Engineering. But it doesn't, you know, then we have the separate class of site reliability engineers, which I wish they had a different term for, because I get so many, you know, inquiry or notifications. I like to see what jobs are out there just to keep up with the industry. And they always put senior reliability engineer, and it's a site reliability engineer, which is very different.
Yeah.
But it.
But you got a different list, and we copied the exact same prompt over.
And if we use ChatGPT or Google search, it does different things. But of course, it's one thing's AI is, it's kind of almost like a, what was it? The guy that did influencing people.
How to Influence Friends, and Dale Carnegie.
Is that Dale him? Carnegie. That's, it's got a bit of that in there. And in fact, it is complimentary to you. It likes to say, given what I know about you, I'd also note your own career place among you recognized specialists in this particular niche. But that's because I definitely talk about Halt and Hass. It knows me because I've been using it a lot for my book and editing articles and things like that, which I really like some of the results. But, you know, when I put in, it didn't mention your name. It didn't. It says, if your question is really, and it rephrases it, who would companies like Apple, NVIDIA, SpaceX, or Amazon call when they extremely difficult electronics reliability problem? I asked it that, and it gave me, you know, said, well, they wouldn't call a famous consultant right away. They'd first organize their own reliability engineers and subject matter experts, and then maybe call an outside consultant. And then the first one they listed was my colleague, Michael Peck, who we wrote a paper together, and I've known for a couple decades. And you know Mohammed Mardaris and Kaus, which Michael Peck founded and heads.
He's still there, as far as I know.
He's still there, right. No, he's still there. And Sandia National Laboratories, which has some, I'm sure, great physical test equipment and FA equipment. Jet Propulsion Laboratory and Boeing. And, of course, I've worked with Boeing, too, in consulting and are showing them what Halt and Hass was. Mm-hmm. I introduced it. Then they called it reliability enhancement testing. And that's, they did a lot of that. Yeah, it's probably better. And it's like Halt was, again, a misnomer. And Greg should have never used life.
No, did you get the copyright for that? Did you claim credit for the reliability enhancement method?
No. And
maybe you could have, there's another book there for you.
Reliability enhancement test.
Yeah. It doesn't need to be a test.
Method. Well, no, it doesn't. It needs to be a process.
Process.
REP.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah. That's what we need, another acronym for.
Yeah, RIP. That would be really good. Rest in peace.
I love acronyms. Yeah, okay. Enough of that.
Well, back to this. Why did we get different answers? And you mentioned some of it is it kind of knows us. And it's the bigger issue is that they want you to come back. So there's a bit of confirmational bias built in.
Right.
So if we can work you or anything we know about you into it, then we're going to do that.
Right.
And so, but we ran it. I mean, I used this a couple of months ago when we were talking about AI and a different topic, and I ran it through the variety of systems that I had access to, and I got different answers for every one of them. And if you take the exact same data set of life data and put it into the ReliaSoft package, and you put it into the various other Weibull, you know, rendering packages, you will get similar but different answers. And there it's the way they implemented the algorithms to do the fitting. They're slightly different. They're not all pulled from the same library. And they make different assumptions and so on. AI is doing that at a different level. They're making, well, what are you really looking for? You asking this question rather than just a generic question being asked.
Right.
So it's the issue I have is, it's pulling from the same set of data, the same set of numbers, same set of websites, everything else. It's got an immense amount of fodder to play with.
Right.
But, so in the scientific method, one of the steps is if I can get a result from an experiment I run here in California, and I give you the recipe or the directions for it out there in Colorado, you should get the same results. But we don't. So is it useful?
Is right.
it something we should do or use?
Well, you know, Fred, this is where maybe you do a mashup of all these. I mean, you got Gemini, you got ChatGTP, you've got, what are the other ones? There's so many AI engines right now.
Then why can't I just go think it through and solve the problem myself?
Because you don't have as access to as many resources as these LLMs have, and that you can't scan thousands of pages or have already known what, you know, this information, where it is and how to find it. So I'm all for it. I do look at it with a grain of salt, you know, and check. And sometimes even with Grammarly or if it's doing my documents, I do reject some of its suggestions because it doesn't know exactly from what we're used to, how we're used to saying something or a terminology. But for the most part, it does a much better job of making, like Grammarly, making everything readable, much more condensed in a proper way. And then ChatGPT can rearrange my articles also to a different format, a different kind of, you know, IEEE standard
article or format. Chicago manual style or standard.
Anything like that. It can quickly do that much faster than I could possibly do it in seconds. And so I can just try a bunch of different things. It's like I can do a bunch of different searches on these AI engines, different ones, and I get slightly different results. But we know that Amazon and their books and everything else is using these same kind of algorithms and setting prices different for different people.
Mm-hmm.
So you may look at my book and get a different price, and I look at my book and, you know, I get a different price, and it changes day to day.
Oh, some of the high volume products change hour to hour or even minute to minute.
Right. It's amazing.
Who's looking at it. Yeah.
I've seen my book as low as 79 and as high as 195.
Oh, I want a rebate.
So
you owe me, Kirk. You owe me $50 now.
So, you know, it's now what the usefulness of AI for reliability engineering, I think, is it's expanding, and it's giving you many more possibilities of where to go. Also, you can try things real quick and ask, you know, do you have examples of this? That's one thing I check. Case histories of reliability are a halt pass, and I bet you they come up with a very few. So, or case histories of reliability, real field reliability issues being solved and how it was done. That I have to do that, see if anybody finds out, because so many of those, just like, you know, the Red Ring of Death on the Xbox and things like that, were never, nobody will ever disclose that. We never know what the real truth was about that failure, unless you're working for one of those companies.
And so here's one for you, though, Kirk, right on that line. As I, while you're, you prompted me to think, oh, what will fail first in a halt for a new iPhone design? So not the best worded prompt ever, but
Right.
And it comes right up and says, oh, solder joints connecting micro components on the logic board and display ribbon cables typically fail first. And that's from a NASA site. And with Apple prototypes, rigorous stress, blah, 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 and it'll do the specific order. And it lists like 10 things that it expects to fail. So we don't even need to do the halt.
No.
Why? It's so much more efficient. I got it, the results here in 10 seconds.
Yeah, but you're not considering that there's a lot of factors, right?
Heels here. Yeah. No, there's a lot of
other factors involved that, no, it doesn't. It says that this is what they do, right? What, you know, I can't see what you're looking at right now, but
the primary hardware weak points usually fall into the specific order.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Just go fix those.
Right. Well,
okay, we're done.
Which ones, right?
There's five.
You got to go find
just
them.
Just go do it.
Go do which ones?
Logic board, micro components, and solder joints.
Right. But they're not all equally.
There's only one flex cable.
There's not all weakness. They're not all the weaknesses. And they don't all fail at once.
I got five. I can only solve three of them today. So I'll do these five and skip the 2 days in the chamber.
Okay. Then you put in, what do I do to make these more robust? You know, that's, if I was going to go your train of thought here, with I start digging in and say, what am I going to do all those? How do I create each line item it's giving you, you know, saying, okay, how do I fix that one? Or how can I improve that design? You know, but you don't know that those aren't, they could be. It's saying those are possibilities of what could break or what's been shown to break in the past. But you don't know what to break in this new design or this variation of design or this, you know, next generation. And there might have been manufacturing things that changed. That's assuming everything was the same in the past. And it hasn't been. In fact, manufacturing's changed. I'm sure
it
will
change. It took you long enough to get to this. But they recommended underfill encapsulation, corner bonding, SAC 405 solder alloys, because that's about as well known as we got anymore. Micro vias, and using that to add mechanical strength to the joints.
And then you could have it. You could have it look at the actual X-ray, the cross sections. You know, you could actually feed it a lot for more information.
This is pretty good for two prompts from a novice.
You know, simulations, you know, that's, I guess that's the way to do.
Yeah, but I think your strongest argument for why HALT's still not obsolete, because we could just do it on AI, is that it's pulling on the history, and HALT is looking for the current.
Exactly.
Which isn't in the record yet.
Right. Right. Things that are new.
But if I'm the program manager and you convince me that, this must be different, and I get four of the five things I got on my first one sentence prompt, I'm going to really question why I spent $10,000 of prototypes to go do this.
Well, this is where you hope your design engineers will look at something like this or know that, you know, and say, this is where we've had weaknesses in the past. Can you make particular focus on some of these mechanisms? And you can do multi-physics simulations. Again, that doesn't count for the variation in manufacturing.
It can if you are smart about how you set up your finite element.
Okay. Right. But the changes that will happen in time, and the variation in possible in-use environments. But those things that you just read as far as the potential weak points in the design should be known. Well, they are known. That's why it came up.
That's why it came up.
Yeah. So that goes back into the design engineers.
Well, let's ask the next prompt. What are unique ways it the new design will fail? And it probably, but the idea is that AI gives us answers, and sometimes it gives us answers that are like the mirror, mirror in the wall, who's the fairest of them all kind of response. Because
sometimes,
you know, well, you got best engineer, and I ended up with best engineer.
No, I didn't mention my name. It did from a personal standpoint, in the fact that I've been using this to do a lot of my website work and re-edit articles, and it knows that I'm, you know, it helped me build a website, so it knows exactly what I'm about as far as that goes in my account.
I didn't show up on your list, and you didn't show up on my list.
Exactly. So, you know, I'm not worried about it. I just think that the way to get known, the way to be out there and get known and realize, you know, your subject matter expert is to write more articles and to also challenge some of the old established dogma in the reliability field. And I'm definitely still fighting the Arrhenius equation and that being mentioned in the days electronics.
Well, didn't you run into an article? You mentioned that earlier when we were chatting. Is the
somebody put Arrhenius equation in the HALT and how to do HALT.
HALT and then use Arrhenius to get a lifetime out of it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh my God.
And I just go, not today, not 2026. No. Come on, people. And that's what is my biggest concern, is there's so much misunderstanding of what a HALT is. Yeah, we do HALT. Yeah. Yeah. We do it all the time, but we stop at ADC.
Yeah. But what? We pass it. We pass it all the time. We never find
pass
failures.
HALT. Right.
We
pass HALT. Exactly. So there's so much misunderstanding once an acronym comes about.
There's the concept and then it gets missed. And there was same with, we were mentioning it earlier, is the SPC stuff. It used to be just wallpaper. It was up there. So the visitors go, oh, you do SPC, check, it's off the box.
Right.
Did they actually do anything on it? Did they actually improve
Does
any,
somebody know that it's going out of control? You know, you could see that it's going out of control. You're
not when it's
anything?
Under glass, printed once a month. Under in the hallway by the visitor entrance. And then I get on the floor and says, where's the SPC charts? And they point back to the hallway where they showed it to me. And it says, that's some engineer not on the floor. They printed it out once a month. And then you told me that they cleaned out all of the defects because he said, quote, we fix those things so they don't show up on the control chart. And I'm like, okay, that's not SPC. Sorry.
No.
But it's
but a lot of people like
it's
to
a
take
misconception.
Up the,
it's a misconception of SPC, HALT, hypothesis
that's
testing, Arrhenius equation. I think you have an article out called the Arrhenius equation.
Yeah. That's it. You know, I mean, Greg was the first to use that. The Arrhenius is Arrhenius. Well, before that, there is an article written by a military I guess a guy that was fairly high level. And it was way back in the 1980s or 1990s, I think, that he put that out. And I think it's, it's still something that amazingly how it's still, people still want to use this misleading, for almost 99.9% of the defects, they think there's some activation energy or something like that.
And there is on some things, but not everything.
There is a very few things. There is, somewhere there's a truth, one of those things. But for the vast majority of the semiconductors and especially solid state hardware, the intrinsic life in a well-centered design is so far out there that most of them will never be seen, I'd say. No, the intrinsic wear out mechanism, except for power electronics, integrated bipolar gate
They have big capacitors, big cans, electrolytic
there's
capacitors.
There's some, but even, you know,
IGBTs, even my pinball machine
has 30-year capacitors in it. And I, you know, many power supplies. I have a little hi-fi tabletop radio of my dad's stereo that's probably 40 years old. It still works great. Mm. It's even got a CD player in it, and it's got a cassette player. A cassette player, of all things.
Now, so, if you had a Beta on that, it'd be worth something. Or not a Beta. What was the 8-track system?
Yeah. So, you know, it's just, it's very frustrating to see this after decades of being in this field, that we can't move away from this belief, and it is misleading. It's so misleading that I see, you know.
Hang on, Kirk. I think the idea here is in bringing up AI and prompts and what you get out of it is that if I do an AI search and it recommends I do predictions, right? We know right here, side note, never do that. Never use a reliability parts count prediction. And it says, hey, you should
try
this. Well,
don't use any kind of prediction.
Well, no. It says, it recommends it, and you say, tell me more about that. And then you teach your system that I'm interested in that. And then it says, here's my result. Here's my bill of materials. Can you check my work, or can you do this for me? You're starting to build this. You're diving into the next time you ask for advice, it's going to recommend a prediction because you were so interested in it the last time. It goes back to that confirmation bias that's getting built into these things. So I think AI is going to help in so many different ways. And we talk about Grammarly. It's really helped just my more better, my more better writing style now.
Yeah, Grammarly would have a problem with that one.
Oh, yeah. No, it's trying to beat that out of me. But the idea is that we need to be smarter than the AI to use it well. And we have to be very and check the facts, check the details. You know, if you're doing some analysis that's going to be $1 million decision, you need to get it right. And going to just get some AI slop and hope for the best is, you might be okay. It might not. It might be catastrophically wrong. But there's no substitute for our own thinking and experience and asking questions and doing all those parts of it. And the other part is, I'm really curious of why it came up with my name right from the start. Maybe I am the most famous. Who knows?
Yeah. I wish it would show me that too. I was hoping it'd come up with Fred Schuckenberg.
Yeah.
It didn't come up with my name either. Yeah. But of course it talks about Halton Hass and how I have this.
You got
niche.
That nailed. You wrote the book out.
Which I kind of want more of a, this is, you know, it's like they say about democracy, our democracy. Well, it's the worst government in the world, except for all the others that have been tried before. And I say, you know, Halton Hass but to me, it's very comprehensive. And there's no one test. There's no several tests that can tell you what the lifetime of a product in the field will be. I'm sorry.
No, just wait until they all get to the field, keep track of them.
Yeah,
you know,
for 30
then you know.
Years.
Then
right.
You know.
Yeah, 30 years, 40 years, well beyond their technological.
It's job security for us. You have to censor the ones that are just taken out because they got replaced.
So I think it'll get better. AI is all built on things that humans did. It didn't create.
It's getting worse. It's getting diluted with AI-generated stuff.
Well,
it is getting diluted.
I haven't seen that. Okay.
Well,
it's not doing any tests itself.
No. But there was an article just the other day that the number of technical papers, especially in medical journals, that are completely written by AI, including all the references that half are not real, and they're getting better at spotting them. It was like 70% of submitted papers were just AI. And that's only once they start checking. And the number of papers that are being redacted or pulled back out of publication because they get discovered as being AI generated with no actual evidence or actual experimentation in it. And that's just one field. What about other fields? And so I think the wrap up here is that be cautious with AI. It can be right. useful, but you need to think. You need to be continue to think. And I don't think HALT's going away anytime soon.
You need to have an understanding of whatever subject you're trying to research and dig into to some extent to be able to question and determine whether it's really valid. Because I could talk about, you know, I could probably ask it about the Arrhenius equation and it wouldn't, for me, I'd have to pretend I'm somebody else starting to account maybe, but you know, it might start telling me how useful it is. And every 10 degrees C doubles the failure of components, you know.
You know, it always misses that it's only for one activation energy that it's even remotely true over a limited span.
Right. But it's all, you know, the inputs were from humans. Okay. I mean, it's all using the vast field and the huge amount.
The unwashed, massive technical knowledge.
Exactly. The unwashed. And there's a lot of dirty information out there. There's a lot of incorrect information out there. And it doesn't know that. It doesn't know what it's just, it would follow, you know, the earth. Everybody believes the earth was flat. It would tell you the earth was flat or something.
Wait a second. It's not. Yeah, you must have seen that online.
And yeah. And so, you know, this is just, it's a kind of a simulation of what the human knowledge has been. It hasn't come up with any new ideas, but it will. I think it will create ability to create new cures, possibly for cancer, new chemicals, new treatments, new things like that. It's certainly better for looking at x-rays and MRIs. It's seeing higher resolution. It can compare thousands of millions of previous, you know, scans and tell you, and it's going to get really good at that.
It's getting there. So let's, for the reliability world, you know, how are you using it? If you're listening to this and are still listening to us ramble on about the AI, you know, how's it working? Have you found it useful?
Is it not useful? And where have you gotten false information? That's what I want to know.
Yeah. So let us know. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. You can find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. Kirk and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our about pages. So send all your hate mail to Kirk and it will be good. AI generated hate mail for Kirk.
Everything you wanted. Yeah. Go ahead and use your Grammarly. I want to be able to read it well.
There you go. Well, thanks, Kirk.
Okay, Fred. We'll talk again sometime soon. Okay.
Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.